Welcome to episode 16 of the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and on this episode, I'm joined by Mary Senega to talk about chocolate flowers, innovation, show judging, ICES, and more. I've also got some special call-in messages from Flexique and Simi Cakes. So whether you're frantically trying to get something done before a deadline, cleaning up after a big project, or traveling between holiday events, let's get this show started to educate and entertain you on your sugar arts journey. Joining me from Kent, Washington, is sugar artist and instructor Mary Senega, whom you may know as the lady who does the modeling chocolate sugar flowers. Welcome, Mary. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
It is late at night here, but I'm very excited to be talking to you.
I'm excited to be talking to you and all your listeners also.
When I was saying to some people recently that I was about to have you on the show, someone said, oh, I can place your name. And then the other person said, she's the one who does the chocolate flowers. So you definitely
yes,
are
that
known.
That is what I'm known for my modeling chocolate flowers. What you usually see in your gum paste or your flower paste, and I do it with modeling chocolate. Working on that for over 20 years to perfect my techniques.
You've been doing modeling chocolate for 20 years? That's amazing.
Yes. I fell in love with it when I first made my first Wilton Rose modeling chocolate roses and said, if I can do a rose with it, I can do any of the flowers, and have worked for the last 20 years to find ways to make the entire thing edible and wired and everything.
Let's start with the basics, because obviously nowadays you can buy some modeling chocolate stuff, but you know, even when I first learned, you couldn't just buy modeling chocolate. So are you using the actual chocolate ones? Are you using candy melts? What is your modeling chocolate procedure?
I actually prefer a mix of them because both your couverture, which is your high-grade chocolate, and your compound, which is the type that you get with the candy melts and things like that, have properties that work well. I find when you're first learning to work with modeling chocolate, it's easier to work with the compounds because it's cheaper, and when you make mistakes, it doesn't cost you as much. But the curvature has things in it that it sets up faster. You can get it thinner. You can work with it differently that the compound doesn't have. Compounds tend to give you a little more workability time. And things. So I take and I combine. I make a 50-50 mix when I make my own. Yeah, so you can get some of the ones that are pre-made, and there's lots of them. All of them are very good.
I mean, is this all white chocolate, or are you ever using the darker?
I prefer to work in white chocolate, but you can work in the darker chocolates and the milk chocolates also. I like colors, so I tend to work in the white chocolate and the colors.
Right, yeah, obviously so. For most modeling chocolate. When I've been doing chocolate experiments, it's amazing how I never would have thought that there'd be such a difference in the physical properties between white and milk and dark until I started experimenting with it. And then when I make that flexible chocolate stuff, the white is so soft and sticky, which is good for some things. And the dark is so rigid and firm. And I guess, I mean, that's your cocoa solids and stuff. But yeah, it's amazing.
And that's the cocoa solids. And one of the things that I do to counterbalance that for when I'm working with the dark chocolates is I always add, when I make my modeling chocolate, I add in for every pound about 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil. So it gives me more workability and it doesn't set up as firmly and I don't get the crumbliness.
That's really interesting. So how does that do for the longevity of it? Does it make it?
I have found that it doesn't affect it at all. As long as you keep it in a cool temperature, you know, if you reheat it up, you're going to, you know, your oils will start to go out, but I've never had a problem. I usually can work with it for up to a year later,
wow.
You know, depending on the age of my chocolate.
And so are you a hot hander or a cold hander?
Oh, I am got super hot hands.
Oh, me too.
So
That is very
super
interesting.
Super hot hands.
Yeah. That makes life difficult with modeling chocolate often, doesn't it?
And so, yeah, I've worked with techniques. One of the things I do that's quite different from everybody else is I use powdered sugar. You know how most people use cornstarch roll things up? I use powdered sugar to insulate my hands against the chocolate, and I work more with my tools. And the reason I use the powdered sugar is the cornstarch tends to cake and clump, and eventually it'll crack your modeling chocolate if you've got too much on there, where the powdered sugar, the sugar granules just give you that insulation. You don't have as much, but you just want to use just a little bit.
Right. Okay, so how do you clean it off? Because I find it just really sticks to my modeling chocolate.
I tend to find that it gives me a porcelain finish, and then when I dust my flowers and things like that, you shouldn't be having so much that you're seeing powdered sugar afterwards.
Okay.
If you do, just take a brush and brush it off.
Okay.
So it'll give you a porcelain-like finish, just like your sugar flowers do.
Okay. Maybe you could talk a little bit for the people listening, because you know how it is with modeling chocolate. A lot of people are scared of it or haven't tried it for one reason.
Yeah, everybody is afraid of it.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's one of those things, just like when you transfer, when you're working, like the difference between buttercream and royal icing, I say, you just have to get used to the different properties of it.
Right.
And learning to work with it and what it does and what it doesn't do. So I always say whenever I go between gum paste and modeling chocolate, I have to retrain myself both ways.
What would you say are some of the key differences, particularly for the flour making?
Well, okay, for when you're making it, first of all, gum paste, you can roll the whole petal thin and it'll dry quickly. And with modeling chocolate, it actually is, it's an illusion that it is thin as it is because you just thin the edges and your centers are thicker. So that's one of the keys, because that is your support system inside your flowers. So instead of using wires and things like that, your support system is the actual chocolate. And so it's learning how to let it set up properly. It doesn't set fast, you know, and chocolate actually never really does totally dry. It sets.
Right. Okay, so are you not having any wire in there at all?
I don't use anything inedible in my modeling chocolate flowers.
Oh, I love that.
What
I
use,
that.
If I'm going to wire it like you do a flower, I use what's called siphoon or rice noodles.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they have a flexibility that you can use. And, like, I'm not going to make the flour look exactly, I'm not going to ever get to that perfect example of, like, we can with sugar flours where it's botanically correct. I'm going to be just off a bit because there's things you cannot do.
Right.
But I get it as close as possible.
Right. So, okay. So you're using the noodles as you would the wire, like, so it's like in that thick vein in the middle of the petal type thing?
Yes. Like on the back of a leaf, you know, how you would wire in your wire on the back of a leaf.
Right.
I do the same thing. I twiddle the chocolate onto my noodle and then I secure it into my petal with a little bit of corn syrup.
Oh, wow. Okay. I hate that we have wires. I mean, I understand why they're there. I'm not knocking.
That's the reason I got into this whole thing. Is I hate, you know, having to tell customers, I hated telling customers, yes, it's beautiful, yes, it's edible, but no, you can't eat it because it has wires in it.
Right. And it's this whole thing, like, again, having just been to Cake International, where everything's so, you know, really hardline about edibility and food safety and stuff. But it's amazing how we as an industry will tumble over ourselves about those issues, but then go, but we're going to use the wires because we have to have the wires.
Yes, we're going to use the wires, or we're going to use styrofoam support. Yeah, things like that.
Exactly.
You know, and that's one of the things I try to get away from. Quite often, if it's something that has a large center and needs a support system, like your peonies or your roses, I will use a candy in the middle. Like for my roses, I do what's called a double kiss rose. I take two chocolate kisses and I melt the bottom of one of them, stick them together, shave off the bottom, you know, one side of one of the tips of one, and that is the center of my rose.
Okay. Yeah. So then someone can actually literally bite into it and, you know, not die.
Yeah. Customers love those. I sold double kiss roses like crazy.
I bet.
Because it just sounded romantic.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the wire isn't romantic to bite into.
No, it's not at all.
And, I mean, and it does create the problems of putting in the cake and a posy pick and, you know, safety seal or whatever solution you're using. It has that international debate and what's safe in one country and what's not allowed in another country. And, yeah, so that's getting around that. Because it does drive me crazy. And I've been wondering about, you know, I've been experimenting with the vermicelli and stuff. But okay, so tell me more about these particular noodles, because I hadn't heard of these.
Okay,
before.
These noodles are the type that when you, if you go and get pho at your Vietnamese restaurants and in places that sell the pho type soup.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's Japanese, and his mother used to send us packages of things, you know, care packages. They live in Hawaii. And these noodles kept showing up. And I was like, what do I do with them? My husband's like, I don't know. So I started playing with them, you know, we were throwing them in soup, but we had so many of them. I started playing with them and noticed that they were super bendable. So because they're made with potato starch and rice flour. And so they were super bendable, and started shaping them and doing things like that. And it progressed into using them with chocolate, you know, and finding out that they were great for the back of leaves, and so that it could get leaves to stand up, and it just progressed from there.
That's genius.
So, and in fact, I do a whole demo on using your noodle. So.
Because obviously around the world, people have different groceries and stuff. So if someone looked for, are they looking for rice flour noodles?
They want to look for one that actually, the best one that I've found, the rice flour noodles work, but they break a little easier.
Okay.
You want to look for the ones that have potato starch and cornstarch in them. Those ones work the best.
And say the name again. What is it called?
They're called saifun or maloney. Asians actually call them maloney noodles, but they usually say saifun on them, S-A-I-F-U-N.
Okay.
All right. A lot of people also call me the noodle lady, so...
That's not a bad thing. This is really genius, because I have been wondering, like, what if I made my own pasta? And what if I increased the protein content? And what if I did this?
Right,
and because, I mean, wire is amazing, because one of the amazing properties of metal that humans have been using for a long time in many applications is because it's hard yet flexible. And that's really hard in edible media to achieve, because usually if it's flexible, it's not going to harden.
And other things that I do for the edibility, you know, besides using noodles, is like if I have a thicker stem that, like, say, when I do my ginger, I'll use your old-fashioned candy sticks.
Right.
So getting a hold of those, there's a company that I buy from that has their straws that are made, you know, with old-fashioned. So there's a hole in the center. And so you get, you know, a double treat. You know, I just cover it with a rolled out piece of green modeling chocolate. And I have this nice fat stem for supporting, like, my ginger or some of my other tropical plants.
Oh, so it's like a candy tube, basically?
Yeah, so it's like a tube, yeah. So it doesn't have the weight that, you know, but it has that strength and that thickness that I need.
Well, and in fact, if you have a tube of the right thickness relative to its inner dimension, this is physics, people, a tube is thicker. A tube is actually stronger than a solid thing for the same reason that an arch is strong.
Right.
Because it pushes down on its outside and in a circular way. I'm moving my hands on this audio podcast in a circle. No one can see me move my hands. That's fine.
We're going to get into physics. Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, so much of what we do is physics. Wire makes me crazy. I mean, it's so useful and it's so not edible.
And that's my point is, that's why, you know, I keep trying to find new and different ways to keep things edible. Now that I learned to wire everything on these noodles, I had to find a way to get them to come together, you know, and I kept practicing until I met Marilyn Bao with Flexique.
Right.
And the product she makes, and took that, some wafer paper, and created edible floral tape.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And so now I am able to wire and tape up all my flowers and things like that. You'll see a few of them on my, if you see my Facebook, also on my website. Like, I have snapdragons, I have some cherry blossoms, I have tuberose. And so, yeah, now we have actual wired, totally edible flowers.
That's amazing.
And it's just learning to mix your mediums and your techniques.
Mary knows what she's talking about when it comes to Flexique. She's one of their certified instructors. Here are Marilyn and Joe to tell you all about the product.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the new world of Flexique. This is Marilyn. Flexique is a revolutionary new product designed to make your cake decorating task much easier and exciting. The Flexique product line is created in several variations, each with its own functional strengths, providing you with additional levels of flexibility and durability for your delicate cake decorations. So to tell you more about each of the products that we have, I want to introduce you to my husband, Joe, and he will tell you about a few of these things.
Hey, y'all. I'm Joe. Wanted to tell you that Flexique comes in three variations. The first one is our pioneer product. It's an edible, flexible, fabric-like compound used to create things like pliable ribbons, shoelaces, garments, and cutouts. It can also be used as a protective coating for edible prints on wafer paper and icing sheets to reduce smears and tears. Since the product actually absorbs into the wafer paper, you can stretch it without tearing or breaking the coated item, giving it flexibility and durability. You can mix it with other materials to increase working time and create lasting pliability, and you can also use it as a food-safe barrier when attaching non-edible decorations to cakes. The second one is a glue. Believe it or not, there are no products out there that will attach cured Flexique to itself, so the glue provides that capability. Add some to Flexique and you can provide some additional stiffness. The last product is our Flexique Instant Lace. It's a no-mix, no-bake formulation that can be used easily spread into lace mold. It dries very quickly and stays flexible forever. You can quickly and easily make edible lace and mix it with cornstarch for softer, sturdier flower petals, and actually even pipe it and use it with transfer sheets or stencils. So there you go.
To learn more about it or place your order, go to www.flexique.com. Also, you can check out our tutorials on flexique.com. Just click on How To and the Flexique Facebook page. There are endless possibilities to using Flexique. Stretch the limits of your confections and your imagination. We have an ambassador program, an instructor program, and people come up with different things all the time. So if you are interested and need more information, don't be afraid to contact us.
My first show that I ever entered, I entered a chocolate wreath. It had flowers on it. And the judge, you know, and I had written, you know, in my instructions that modeling chocolate was all I used. But it wasn't clear enough because they had never seen flowers made from modeling chocolate beyond a rose or a lily or something like that. And this was an entire spring arrangement of flowers all the way around the wreath. And so she said, your chocolate work is fantastic, but you need to work on your gum paste flowers. They're a little thick.
Oh, jeez.
And I had to go back to the judge. And luckily, you know, at our show here in Washington, we put our initials on our judging sheets and said, this is you, right? I said, what gum paste flowers are you referring? And she said, let's go back and look at your piece, you know. And she said, those flowers there. I said, those are made out of chocolate. She went, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had something, and that was, you know, and luckily I had people who believed in me to help to keep spurring me to go forward.
Right, because that is important. I mean, and that's actually one of the things I'm finding a little frustrating here with the British shows is, and I've talked to people at the shows about it, and I think they understand that there's an innovation deficit, shall we say, compared to the American shows. And I've told them, like, about the Innovator Award in Austin and things like that, because, I mean, like, that's just literally what happened to me 2 weeks ago, that they had this category called Pushing the Boundaries. And
oh, you were so robbed.
I thought I was pushing a boundary.
You were so robbed. I'm not kidding,
oh, that's sweet.
But,
well, but, you know, okay, like, it's fair enough that, I mean, what we've all agreed on, I mean, because even the judge agreed, was that the category wasn't well-defined. So where I was approaching it as, an innovator category, that's not what they, you know, the thing is, he couldn't even articulate to me clearly what they wanted by pushing the boundaries other than, quote unquote, something different. That's what he said. They were looking for something different.
And that's one of the things we are trying to clear up with ICES doing their judging program, is getting our judges to understand how to define each category and what they really mean. So.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, and it's tricky because, you know, obviously I help write or proofread the rules for Austin, and we still have questions every year. That's not going to.
Oh, yeah, that's normal. That's normal. If somebody's not questioning it, it's not adapting and changing.
Exactly, and right. So if you can answer every question, then by definition, there is no innovation, right? I mean, and it's that always that balance. And again, I can see totally both sides of this. I'm not knocking one show or the other.
I know you are.
There are some shows that have just completely open-ended. Just bring pretty things is basic. I mean, the rules come down to
that's all they want you to do.
Bring pretty things. And then there are other shows that are like, it must be 6 identical cupcakes of exactly this height and they will be tasted. And both of those are legit. And this is when you're competing, this is why I keep saying about read the rules. It's not even just knowing, is your piece going to fit in the space? That's kind of obvious. people, read the rules. Is your piece going to fit in the space, right?
Right. That's right off the bat. Yeah, it doesn't fit in the space that, you know.
You should read the entire rule set, even the ones that's not your category, because you get an idea of what is the flavor of this show. Is this a thing where the judges are looking for botanical correctness and precision and tradition? I mean, and that is a lot of the British shows. Or is it like more like Austin, where it's, you know, airy-fairy, artsy-fartsy, bring something pretty and we'll see how it goes?
Well, you know, and hopefully you have a show that comes somewhere in between.
Right.
You know, and I would say Austin is more that way. It's more, they go for technique, but they also are looking for innovation and artistic.
That's right.
I always say cake artists fall usually in one of two categories, a technician or the artist. And you have a few that can go both, but usually they swing one way or the other.
Yeah, obviously there are people who do both really, really well. But part of it is a different approach. It's, and again, not one better than the other, so no one get mad at me, but...
And it's also knowing your judges. Sometimes if you know the judges that are coming in, you kind of have an uptick in knowing what's going on. So
definitely,
because some judges are by the book, it must follow the exact rules and everything, you know, and it's about, you know, A plus B must equal C, you know, and the other ones are like, I'll give you a little wiggle room and, you know, we'll see how things go. I like, you know, innovation. And if you haven't done it, absolutely perfect. So.
Right. And going back to the edibility, I mean, I have found here at the British shows, whereas in Austin, if I push into further edibility, I get rewarded for that in terms of the point total. Here,
and see, I was trained, one of the very first lady who taught me gum paste flowers, she was trained by the British Sugar Craft Guild. And so she was into making as much of it as possible edible. In fact, she had entered a basket of violets, and they dinged her for not using an edible basket when it was an edible basket. So it was that good, you know. And so I'm always thankful for her for that, you know, that she taught me to look at things and figure out a way to make it edible.
Yeah, because to me, I mean, again, we have different people in our cake world that some people aren't doing competitions at all. They are selling cakes all the time. And some people like me are doing more competitions and rarely selling cakes. And some people are in the middle. It is difficult sometimes to balance those worlds. But yeah, so I find in Austin, if I bring something where I could have made something out of something inedible that was allowed within the rules, but I made it edible, you get points for it. Whereas
should get extra points for it. Yes.
Yeah, but you don't. Yeah, but you don't at Cake International, because it's happened to me multiple times. This year, obviously, I didn't put out a sheet explaining anything, in part because judges in the past, it's iffy whether or not they count what's on a sheet when at a show where it doesn't require it. And so, like last year, I did the Christmas piece where the pets had destroyed the Christmas living room.
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah, that was fantastic.
And I went for 100% edibility other than the board. There is no support structure in there. The walls are pastillage. Yeah, and each handmade individual brick. I mean, when I talked to the judge about it, and I want to say that that judge is someone I really like, and that was the one I hugged when she told me that I had a bronze. So, I mean, it was a very nice judge. But even, like, she, when I said, that, you know, this was all edible and that I'd used spaghetti inside the modeling chocolate for the tree, so it would be 100% edible, it was like, that's nice. Like, it wasn't, good, extra points. I don't even know that's nailed down in any of the rules that you can read. That's experience, is learning. Some shows value that more than others. Some shows require it more than others.
And as I said, and also, it's, again, it comes down to the individual judges, whether they value that, they should value that it is all edible, because that's a harder thing to do.
Exactly.
Do they? And I've run across the same thing, you know.
That's a difference between the American shows and the British shows in terms of the judging is... and again, neither one's better than the other, but it's different, and people need to know, is because the American shows, it's whoever's running the show, they sort of pick and choose the judges they want, whether it's by the flavor of the show or by, you know, some pick because they're celebrities, and sometimes right. they're the long-term right. celebrities, sometimes they're the celebrity du jour, and that's all very different characteristics. Whereas here, the British shows, they're the trained judges. It's almost, it's not a union, but it's almost like a union.
Well, see, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Yeah,
and,
so.
And that's one of the things that ICES is trying to do with the ICES certified judges, is we're trying to give a base mark of what you should be as a judge.
Right.
You know, so that you do have, you know, you can bring in judges who have been trained to in what to look for. I'm not saying that, you know, we are the best judges, but I'm saying, you know, it shows a certain standard.
Yeah. And I can see, again, multiple sides of this, because when you have someone sort of fresh and new, they're more likely to, say, appreciate the innovation. And definitely if someone's been doing it a long time and hasn't done any, like, refreshing courses, then they can sort of get bogged down into, I only value tradition and I only value this.
And I think judges should be up on every medium. They should, you know, they should be trying out new mediums as they're coming out.
Oh, I agree. And but to some extent, that's not, I don't even know how realistic. I mean, like, my weirdness with the gummy thing,
yeah.
No one's doing that. Like, all the people who do it come tell me they're doing it. So I know all 5 people who've tried it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, right here, I completely understand. I know who's doing modeling chocolate flowers and who's doing, you know, but I think that you should be going to demos about this. You should be, you know, if you get an opportunity, you should take a class on it or, you know, studying up on it because, you know, these people who are innovating these products are doing demos. They're doing tutorials and things like that. It's in this day and age, it's a lot easier to keep up with the techniques and stuff.
Agreed.
But that's one thing as a judge myself, I also hopefully learn from the people that I judge, you know. When they're trying new techniques, when they're doing things that are different and unusual, I'm hoping that I'm learning from them also. Because if I see something new and different, I will, you know, I write that person's name down so I can go and talk to them about it afterwards.
Exactly.
Because I want to know how they've done that, you know, and how they achieved this. And so, you know, when I see new and different things, I'm excited about learning about it. So judges can't lose that spark either.
That's why the whole gummy thing came out of me wanting to make this Wolverine tank. And so, you know, contrasting like the conversation I just had a couple weeks ago at Cake International, where there was a little bit of, yeah, we don't like this and we don't like that and you shouldn't have done this. And I would say, well, but do you know what it is? And he'd say, yes. And I kind of look at him and say, like, I was trying to be polite, right? But, like, he was telling me he knew what it was, but, like,
he wasn't in a mood, I know that feeling.
He couldn't exactly possibly have known what it was because then he wouldn't have answered the way, you know. I was really working to be polite and respectful because you should do that. But, and also, it's not like it was going to change any minds at that point. But I left that discussion and I was contrasting that in my head to the first time I did gummy. And the judge, what I was saying sort of vaguely snidely on Facebook later when I was a little bit annoyed, I was like, well, the judges that first saw it, they asked me how to do it. But it's okay because they were nobodies like Mike McCary and Lorraine Duffy and Nick Lodge. Like, they were just a bunch of, those are beginners. They're just beginners. No, but that's what happened in Austin. After the judging was done, like, and at the end of the show, they marched me over there and said, how did you do this? And we pulled it apart.
That's what you should be doing.
Yeah. And so
you should be, you know, when you see something that you don't understand, you need to go and talk to them.
Yeah. And I think that's how we move the industry forward. And again, I don't just mean for me. So,
yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. I don't want to sound like I'm ranting about it. This is more just, you know, rules and cake shows in general.
This is, trust me, as somebody who's pushed the boundaries more than once, you know, completely understand. And so, you know, totally see your side of the point on that, you know, yeah. on that, because I too am a boundary pusher.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's, I'm going to start a little club.
and I do want to clarify, I don't feel robbed. I just feel like,
no,
I didn't fit what they wanted.
Like it should be a teaching moment.
Yeah.
It's always the way I look at it. You know, okay, so you don't understand this. You know, there's times, yeah, I've come out of a show and gone, you know, they didn't understand a single thing I did.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when I got back notes like, your gum paste flowers are beautiful. And you're like, well, you missed that one.
Yes.
You know, but your cake covering, your kit covering has this, this, and you're like, those are properties of Model and Charlie.
Yeah, I got frustrated when he said, well, because this part here is rough. And I'm like, but it's supposed to look like stained glass. I mean, I did stained glass before I had kids. Right. Didn't want to involve lead when
sometimes,
I was pregnant.
Sometimes you have textured glass.
Well, no, not just the glass, but I mean, like the leading.
Oh, you're talking about the leading.
Yeah,
yes.
Soldering versus lead came. Lead came is the stuff. So for our audience who doesn't know, lead came is if you see a stained glass window and the pieces like are sort of loose, that's the lead came, and it's like a little railroad track that you bend around and you just solder it closed. Versus soldered glass, that's where you're actually melting lead, or usually these days a lead tin mixture, and you are running a melted bead through the glass and with copper foil stuck to the glass.
Yeah.
Right. So that is your basic how you do lead solder stained glass. My flexible edible stained glass technique is like that. I mean, I could have taken, I've made smooth gummy before. You just take a hot spoon and you just zip it along and it's smooth. I could have made it smooth. I didn't because it was supposed to look like stained glass. But they hated it because it wasn't smooth.
As I said, each judge...
Yeah, so you don't argue with that.
Judges slightly differently, and sometimes you take the bad, and hopefully you can go back and have a talk with them and explain, and that's a training moment for them. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I explained, well, this is what I meant, and he just shook his head and said, no, that I was lucky to get Certificate of Merit, and I thanked him, and then, you know, I posted on Facebook, and a lot of really nice people said it was good, including some of my idols.
There's just no training moment.
Yes. You know, like, at the end of the day, you can, this is what I keep saying on the show, it is totally valid to be disappointed in your result as long as you're professional and polite about it.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, and it is totally valid to disagree. I mean, we're in art. We're always going to have subjective disagreements. Totally valid.
Most definitely, yes.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, in that moment, as I've said, there's a training moment for both of you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you learn, okay, if I know that judge is going to be, might be judging me, I don't push the boundaries. Sometimes you just, you take what it is and say, hey, if I learn something new, I'm good with it.
That's right. And I, like I said, part of that is the experience you accumulate with the flavor of each show. And then, of course, you have to pay attention if the show has a staff change or a head judge change, that's going to change that flavor again.
It gets kind of crazy. But
yeah.
I just tend to, you know, when I go in, when I'm judging, I try to make sure I have a comment or a reason for every single point I take off. But, you know, and other judges, you know, they look at it and say, okay, that's a number, and they've already got it in their mind. And so it again comes back to, I think, your own the judge's own personal way that they judge,
mm-hmm.
and it can make a difference.
Oh, absolutely.
I've seen one judge that will judge it really high, the other one will judge it really low, you know, and judges do have, you have what we call Santa Claus and the Grinch.
Right.
You know, so, and you can be either. And sometimes you can be both at the same time.
Yeah, well, I mean, because again, we each bring our personal preferences and biases, and I don't even mean that in a negative way. Bias can be good too, and I mean, because clearly you and I are biased towards innovators, aren't we? If you and I were judging something, and the rules permitted it, if we were looking at, you and I were looking at two, you know, skill level equal pieces, and we saw one person had pushed a boundary of edibility and tried something newer, and maybe was a little less refined than something that had played it safe. I mean, well, okay, I shouldn't speak for you. I personally would gravitate towards the one that had pushed the boundary.
I'm just, you know, technique matters, but if you've pushed an innovation for me, yes, I am. I'm one of those that I will go more towards the innovation.
Right, but not everyone's going to be that way. And
not every judge is that way. Some of them will push more for the technique.
Right, which is, again, completely valid. And that's this is why when people do get very, very upset about results,
and
there's just no place
right
for that.
Please go and talk to the judge. Find out why the judge scored it that way. Most every judge is happy to talk to you about why they scored your piece the way they did and answer questions.
Yeah. But
I know I've written on some of them, please see me or someone who does this technique, you know, is a master of this technique to understand what you might do to improve on your score. You know,
yeah.
It's hard to say that to them, but sometimes you have so much that you want to tell them and you want to be able to help them along. I always look at everything as a teachable moment.
Well, and you must come across pieces where you can see the spark of something amazing, but something needs to be refined.
Right.
And so you just as someone in this industry, you want that person to feel encouraged, even if they maybe didn't score as well.
Yes. And a judge show should be all about encouragement.
99% of judges.
Usually they're on your side. They want you to score well.
Exactly.
They want to give you what they can. And most judges that I've run across, are there to help you and get you to understand how you can make yourself a better artist.
Yeah.
And again, teachability, getting you to that next level.
Yeah, I would say 99% of judges are in it because they want to see the industry do well. They want to see individuals do well. Even if you look at your judging sheet and think, "Oh, that was mean," almost never do they mean it mean. It's just if something seems terse, it's just because they have 5 seconds to write a comment for everybody.
Yeah, you're doing 50 cakes,
Yeah.
After a while, your hand cramps and
and it's easy as.
I've written this 400 times. Yeah, there's a couple of phrases I've said that I want on a recorder that I can just, sticker it across the page.
Yeah, well, Dawn Parrott was just saying at Cake International, and I put it in last episode, and I've heard her say this before, get that peak off your dot, get the peaks off it. So I know that's because when you're piping your rolling dots, you should be pushing down that peak.
Thin those edges.
So I'm sure there are a lot of blend the seams.
Yes, things like that. Those ones are usually just tips that will get you those higher points.
That's right.
And if you get something and say it's out of 10 points that you've got a category that's out of 10 points, look at it and they will usually, most of us will coach it in a way that we say something nice, we tell you where the problem is and give you a solution.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's what you get.
Yeah.
Because I hate when I score like a 6 and get a, "Oh, great job."
Yeah. I would actually rather.
That doesn't do anything. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Because, while it's lovely to hear "great job," it's not as specifically useful as, "Well, why did I get a 6?
Right.
But yes, so competitors do need to keep in mind, though, that judges do only have a very limited time
to
write the comments.
Have a short amount of time with your piece. And yeah. So if you have more questions.
That's right. So go talk to them. Especially when you get a result that you don't like and you're looking at a written scoring card, you are, in that moment, in your own biased mind, feeling sad, maybe angry, maybe frustrated, especially if you've had a long, busy day. Depending on when you get this card, if you get it on the Sunday after
they're
a three-day show.
They're going to judge right at that point.
Right. So you get this card.
And then come back to them.
Yeah.
So,
you get this card and it says something very terse that isn't meant emotionally either way, but your emotional state can dictate how you read it. So you're going to read it as a judge saying, "You're terrible," when the judge didn't mean that at all. The judge meant to say, "You have this problem and here's how to fix it."
As you look at your card, read it through, take a breather, read it a second time. And sometimes you get mad at the second time, I know.
that has happened.
Politely go to the judge and ask them, and take them to your piece. Because let me tell you now, after you've judged, your mind is a jumble of what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can go back and go, "Oh, I judged that kick, but I don't remember seeing that kick," because you get telefocused on it and what, what it's about. Let us explain to you why we judged you that way. We're glad to do that as judges.
Exactly. And ultimately, my advice to anyone competing is if you emotionally cannot handle that, maybe don't compete. If it's going to make you so sad or feel like you can't do cake anymore because you didn't score well, if you feel like you're going to quit cake because you didn't win a top prize, find another outlet or skip.
I was going to say,
skip
don't
this
go
year.
Into a cake show winning that top prize.
No, absolutely not.
That right there is a defeat to you right away. Go in there so that and always think of it as that learning ability.
That's right.
Go in there so that it teaches you something. Try a new technique a number of times and then, work out the bugs and then put it into your piece for it to be. And take what the judges tell you and put it into your next piece and so that you are learning as you're going along and you are improving. And always, and one of the things I always tell my students, keep the pictures of what you did at some time. Go back and look at them in 5 years.
Yeah.
You will be amazed at your progress.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
So, nobody learns everything overnight. It takes numbers and numbers of years to become a master.
Unless apparently you're Carla Pooge. I don't know if you listened to my most recent episode, but Carla Pooge.
Well, I always find that people who pick up techniques really quickly sometimes have a background in it, whether it's in a different art field.
That's very
you know,
often.
Or something along that line. They may have been a sculptor, or they may have taken, you know, painting classes, things like that, that have helped them.
Yeah.
So they already have a leg up on it.
Yeah. Although apparently she said no, she just started making heads 2 years ago and now is like modeler.
Some people you just say.
Well, there's a term for that. It's called the profoundly gifted, and they're rare. I mean, Mozart was rare for a reason.
They're annoying, yeah.
You know.
So I love them. So, you know, and there are some people I've met who just, you know, like pick up a piping bag and they can do it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's others who you do have to struggle through it.
Yeah, and that is most of us.
At their own pace.
Yeah,
and that may not be the technique for you. You may be able to do it, you know, well, but it may not be the technique that may be, you know, your technique will find you.
Oh, I 100% agree.
Yeah. It is like the sun has come out and is shining on you.
Yeah,
you do find your technique.
I just had that. I just took Dawn Parrott's class at Jackie Kelly's studio in London last weekend. And Jackie and I are modelers. And of course, Dawn is a piper. I mean,
Piper, yes.
we've all done each of these things. But
yeah,
100%, Jackie and I are looking at each other. Because Dawn's like, you just do this. And Jackie and I just look at each other across the table and be like, yeah, all right. Sure.
Stuff, you know, you may be proficient at piping, but you excel at modeling. And I understand the same thing. You know, I do piping and modeling. I mean, my two favorite things are buttercream and chocolate. You know, so
that sounds
delicious. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I love piping in buttercream. I hate piping in oil. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. It annoys the heck out of me. I just don't like the feel of it. I don't like. I want my things to feel luscious and feel and taste luscious. Mm-hmm. I'm all about the sensories. And with chocolate, you know, I like to model and I like working with chocolate. It's that sensory thing and the smell and things like that.
So I have a question for you. Have you ever sculpted buttercream with your hands?
Yes. In fact, my good friend Becky Wortman is that's what she's known for. And I absolutely love her. And so, you know, was seeing her do it and watched a few demos with her and got some tips and hints. You know, learning to do that, it is so much fun. But I love it. It's so cool.
Because someone had told me about the rolled buttercream thing, right? Which is basically,
mm-hmm.
for the listeners, it's kind of just like extra stiff buttercream. That's amazing.
She actually doesn't get it super stiff. She has a recipe that she likes working with. But it's not super stiff buttercream.
Okay.
She may use it for some of her centers, but if you've seen any of her work is amazing. I know she was at the Oklahoma Sugar Art Show a couple of years ago and did an angel with a lion laying down. They had a whole cold room for her to work in. I got to know her when she first started out when she was a student at a local culinary college. She started by working in Crisco.
Oh, wow.
And let me tell you, the judges did not know how to judge that.
No, I bet they didn't.
We were just in awe, you know. And there are times when you just find it and you are just in awe as a judge. I just love her to death because, you know, she's so innovative and different.
Oh my God, that thing you just made? That was amazing! You are so good at this! In terms of cake shows, like this will be the last year that Peo could enter the Austin show as a not judged child. No, a junior, right?
Uh-huh.
And she's very happy because we actually thought that she couldn't this year. that she was, but it's no, because she's just turned 12. So she'll still be 12 for the show. So she can, this is her last year to do it. So she's very happy.
Yeah.
Cause she honestly does not want to compete, particularly cause she's seen how Austin teens bring it.
Yeah. My youngest had, there was another lady who had a daughter that was the same age as my daughter. Those two were competitive all the way up until they were 10 years old. They were, you know, they were upset that they weren't being judged. I mean, our judges actually did judge them, but they didn't score them.
Right.
You know, everybody got a participation ribbon, which, you know, they were, the two of them were always neck and neck up the top. They would sit there and look at each other's scores and argue about who should have, you know, because we do give up best of the children's division.
Oh, right.
But it was, you know, they traded off years for years. It was quite interesting to, you know, see how they could up the ante, each one of them.
That, again, is one of those totally valid differences between shows. I mean, obviously, my Peo did one Cake International when we were first here. Her first entry at Cake International was the first time she was actually judged, because she was just used to Austin, where you have fun with cake and you get a medal, which is valid. And she comes here, and it's an actual, you know, talk to the judge and get comments. And she was kind of like, I don't want feedback. I just want to have fun with cake. But there are definitely,
and you know, there's a difference. And you know, and we kind of fell in the middle of that. So they got to talk to the judges to find out how to improve themselves. But they, you know, it didn't affect how they were scored or anything like that, because we wrote their ages on there and things like that. So,
the judges
were also taught how to look for age appropriability and things like that.
Because that is, that is definitely part of it. I mean, it's so important. At Cake International, the kids category, kids get disqualified.
Like, you know, and
that's a little, you know, hard. I mean, yeah. I think that's a bit hard. But, I mean, that's fair. That's their show and they can do that. But that's part of why Peo didn't want to do it anymore. But when she saw Cake had been disqualified because I think it had to have an inscription on it, and it didn't have an inscription on it, which that is valid. I'm not saying this qualification shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
It's in the rules, but the fact that
this comes down to a culture thing.
Exactly. The fact that they even do disqualify Cakes put her off. Her feelings are valid. Their show is valid, but they're not going to match. That's just, you know, she prefers the Austin way of doing it. And definitely there are going to be kids who are incredibly talented and very competitive in this, who are going to find Austin's thing kind of dull, because that's not what
and you know, different kids want different things.
Exactly.
You know, we'll look at Sydney Galfrin, who has come so far at such a young age.
Yes.
And we have others that are, you know, the same way.
Tyler Garen.
And, you know, we need to be able to feed both their innovation and their, you know, and their thirst for knowledge, and also, you know, but some kids are just, they just want to do it for fun.
That's right. And I mean, as an industry, we want both, because we want to sell fondant and tools and basic tools to the kid who just wants to play with sugar, or the adult who just wants to play with sugar. And we want the high-end artists, and we want the production level, get 10 cakes out the door on Tuesday. We as an industry need to cater to all of those. That's why this caker faker nonsense really drives me up the wall, because it's all valid. Those are, you know, the people that they get called fakers are the ones who are setting the art standard, who are teaching, who are innovating. And the people who are out there doing a lot of, you know, the same Minecraft cake over and over again, because that's what their clients want. That is just as valid. It's all equally valid. And if
there's room for all of us. So that person, you know, they're more bakery inclined. There's room for you in the sugar art world. There's just as much room for them as there is for the person who goes out and makes the one of a kind cakes, or, you know, teaches a class. There's room for all of us.
We
need to learn to be more inclusive and include everybody.
Exactly. In fact, I would even argue that it's beyond just that there's room for all of us. We're all required. We're all holding each other up. Because if we don't have someone out there doing the weird new technique that then prompts one of these great companies that we love to make the new tool that then the production person uses to increase their production, we need this feedback loop. We need this thing where we are supporting each other in these different ways, and respecting each other for each other's art, for the production, for the differing needs. When we respect each other for that, we're all better off.
We are. We are better off if we include everybody. Nobody, you know, there is no bad. You may not be a person who comes up with new ideas, but you are a person who can deliver on that, you know, on those techniques consistently. You're needed, you know. Trust me, out in the bakery world, I've worked both sides of the, you know, I'm a teacher, I'm a, you know, a judge and an artist, but I've also worked production bakery, and you're needed out there, you know. You fill a gap, and I go out and I've trained people to be production bakery students. We need to include it all, and keep innovating, keep, you know, working towards it. Sometimes you have to work as a production bakery. I went back to working at one time when I was getting ready to take my certification because I knew I needed to get my speed back up. Because let me tell you, when you can do 25, you and you can frost 25 cakes in an hour, you know your speed is at the top, mm-hmm. you know. I was at a point that I could cover my fondant cake in less than 5 minutes.
Wow.
So, which to me, you know, that was what was important. I knew I needed to get my speed back up because when you're doing a certification or you're doing a live challenge, you need to have that speed and you need to have that technique. It's a good balance of both.
Yep. And I will confess right now, I do not have the speed because it's not my focus. I don't need to.
Right. Because that's not what you're doing. You're not doing the same thing over and over and over.
No, it's part of, why I quote unquote sell cakes because if someone wants to pay me enough, I will. But it's not what I actually want to do. I want to do the blogging, the podcast, and the experiment stuff.
Yeah. When I owned my bakery and they were going to renovate the building and raise the prices, I said, that's not the side of this I enjoy. I enjoy teaching and I enjoy, you know, going out and doing the teaching side of things. So I'm going to go more towards that.
Yeah. And
it's the money, because, you know, the constant money that you get on a regular, you know, with a regular bakery job. But, you know, both is needed. Everybody finds their path. So, you know, I love the sponsors I have. There's a reason I have them for sponsors, because their products I stand behind 100%.
Well, if you want to name some, feel free.
Oh, my favorites, the Sugar Art for their colors. Their colors are amazing. They blend beautifully with chocolate. I've worked with them for 20 years. Simi Cakes and their molds, I love using a lot of their different and unique things that they have. Flexique, right. I'm not kidding. I couldn't have made my dreams come true without them. My dream was to find a way to have completely wired, edible wired stuff, and without their product I never could have gotten there. You have farm products and stand behind them.
Yeah.
So, but you know, there's things that I definitely warn people against, like Disco Dust, Sparkle the Glitter.
Yeah.
That, you know, is non-toxic. I make sure to tell people, you know, if it's non-toxic, you must make sure that it's removable if you're going to put it anywhere, anything that's not totally edible. And that's one of the things I work towards, you know, trying to get away from, is anything that is not edible, completely edible.
Yeah, and you know, with that stuff now, honestly, like 5 years ago, right, when that stuff was out, boy, it's pretty. Boy, it's so pretty. But
it's so pretty, but yeah.
But now, there's like, I'm literally looking at right in front of me is a rainbow dust pottle of edible glitter. It came in cake bag. I love this cake bag thing where you subscribe and you get like random cake tools every month. Just today, literally, I'm going to pick it up and I've got rainbow dust, 100% edible glitter. And it's called, the color is called Christmas, and it's like, it's green and red. Now, is it sparkly like Disco Dust? No, because it's not plastic. It's gelatin.
Is it the gum arabic or the...
Oh my God, I'd have to have bifocals to read this ingredient list. Let's see what, gum arabic. Gum arabic, and then it's got the color listings with their E-numbers and a preservative.
And that's been edible glitter that's been around for ages. You crush it up really fine, and yes, it gets a beautiful sparkle, but it doesn't do that, the glimmer that, you know, that Disco Dust does.
No, I mean...
And trust me, anytime somebody says that it's edible, I go and try to check it out, and I'm always... It's not edible. It's non-toxic.
Yeah, you know.
You see the sad face come on because it's so pretty and, you know, it's so sparkly. But yeah, we haven't found anything yet that I know of.
And here's the thing that I just saw coming up just today on Facebook. Someone was sharing that for Christmas decorations, apparently here in the UK, a bunch of the nursery schools are banning craft glitter. because, not for the reasons that we think, that glitter gets on everything and never comes off and your kid has glitter and they've infected your house with glitter for a month. That's not the reason. A bunch of the nurseries have realized this is plastic going in the ocean. And again, in the most recent episode, we talked about the plastic that breaks up and goes into the ocean and is creating the trans-Pacific garbage patch and all this stuff. Disco dusts, if it's a plastic-based thing, that's where it's going. And we, as a species, need to be a bit more mindful of that. And it's so pretty, you guys. It is so pretty. And I want to use it. And I have a bunch of it. I want a full tray of it the year that I got.
I have a whole drawer of it. But it's a drawer I hardly ever open because I know that, I can only use it.
You shouldn't really put it on a cupcake, but it's so pretty. I feel this conflict.
If I put it on a cupcake, it's like around the edge of something and something that will be removed. But I keep shying away from it because of the fact that it's non-edible.
That's right.
I'm sorry, but non-toxic still means it's not edible.
That's right. I mean, I have had it on a cupcake. I have eaten it. It goes through you. I know it's not, but it's bad. We shouldn't be doing this. And now it's going to the oceans, guys. It's killing our oceans. We need to back it off. And we have this other option. We have the gelatin-based option, which is edible, and it'll melt in water, so it's not going to pollute. I mean, some of them will be vegan and some of them won't, depending on what they're... I mean, if you make your own out of, standard gelatin.
You can use the ones that are based off of seaweed algae.
Yeah, the agar stuff, yeah.
And you crush it really fine and you'll get it. You can also get a really pretty sugar.
Yeah.
From taking and crushing up your sugar candies, your ice and malt, you can get a pretty shimmer off of those too.
Yeah, and I mean, so, you're not going to get that rainbow, like particularly the disco dust rainbow one.
Hologram,
No, we're not going to get that. But maybe it's time to say that was pretty for a while, but we like having live fish.
we like having edible product that doesn't harm anybody else. Yeah,
that's right. And then this is the conflict that we have. But so I've got the bottles that I have that I haven't used for years. If I, for a competition piece, maybe.
I have product clear back from when it first started showing up in 1990-something.
Yeah.
That's still sits in my drawer, and I look at it going,
"It's
so pretty."
Well, there you go. Here's what we do with all of our pots of disco dust. If we want to be really, good about edibility and really good about the environment, here's what we should all do. We should all just make ourselves a display of the little pottles in our kitchens, where it's all nicely contained, and we can look at it and go, "Look how pretty it is." And we don't need it to actually come out of the little pot.
That's true.
There you go. Pinteresting.
I have a whole drawer of it. One of those. It's one of those stackable type drawers that has all the little. I could put a pair of shoes into this drawer.
I'm in the middle of organizing my stuff. This is now that I got Cake International over with. Here's my organizing plan. Okay. Over the last few months, I have bought nail polish shelves for all the little tiny bottles of color. I haven't sorted them yet, but I've just thrown them all in there, but I'm going to sort them. So, I'm talking about like my little rainbow dust metallic paints and my roll cam neon paints and the small Americolor tubes, right? All those things. Yeah. The big rainbow dust squeezy tubes don't fit in those well. And unfortunately, my precious big Americolors just barely don't fit. But I have a bigger old IKEA acrylic shelf that those are in. And then I've bought one of these tool drawers, like that you're supposed to sort your screws and bolts in. And I'm going to sort all my small tools, my tips. Because, I have two of those Wilton tip holder boxes, the white ones with the clear top.
I give those up.
Yeah, I long ago hit the point where I have way too many tips for those things because I have a lot of number four tips because that's what I do with the stained glass techniques with.
Uh-huh.
So that's like I have dozens of number fours and I have like a bunch of grass tips because, when I teach kids, they like grass tips, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to sort them by how I need them sorted. It won't be anyone else's sorting technique because someone else, Don Parrott has probably a bazillion, zeros and ones. I have one zero and one. Right. Because I don't need more than that. So I'll have one drawer that's got like zero to three and then I'll have a drawer of fours and then I'll have a drawer of five and up, and then I'll have a, you know, I don't do a lot of buttercream flour, so I only have one of each leaf tip. I'm going to sort all that into those little drawers. Here's how I'm going to deal with all my molds. I'm going to use Evernote. I'm going to take a picture of every single mold and cutter I have and put it into Evernote with a tagging system. So when I think,
you are organized.
Oh, no, give me praise when I actually get it done, because there's a difference between thinking it and getting it done, because I could also just go knit in front of the TV instead of doing this, but or get another podcast episode edited. But so, you know, my idea will be so I can use Evernote, which I'm already using to organize my recipes just for, like, my you know, feeding my family. And so I'm going to use Evernote to do tagging so that a given cutter can be tagged as an animal and, you know, a summer or, like, you know, a holiday. Like, so, like, if say there was, like, a unicorn, like, maybe that's magic and it's an animal and it's – maybe it's big. Like, whatever categorizations I need, because I'm hitting that point where I can't remember where anything is or if I even really own it.
Yeah. See, and this is one thing I like. And now that as a teacher, I got rid of all the things that I had that are no longer in production.
Right.
Let me tell you, that was I made quite a bit of money on that one.
I bet.
and I've only got things because as a teacher, as somebody who does things for, you know, for photographs and advertisement and things like that, you know, I want to keep product people can get a hold of. I don't want to have things that they can't get. Mm. And so I've got them, each one of them, I've written who it belongs to with a Sharpie on the side of the cutter. Or there's a card in with where I store them of who it comes from.
Oh, that's smart.
Makes it easier for me to be able, when it comes time to write up the techniques of how I did things and who I used and, you know, what I used and things like that. But I have all of my cutters I store them by shape, because I don't use a cutter just because a cutter says that it's only for, say, peonies. I may use that same cutter to make roses. I may use it to make any type of five-petal flower if it's a five-petal one. Like my elongated leaves, they're also good for lilies. They're good for – so I do by shape, and then that shape has every size of that shape in there, whether it be a half inch, you know, long, or or even a quarter inch long, all the way up to a five-inch elongated leaf. Each one has who it belongs to, so that way that's for my knowledge. And when I use molds and stuff, they're kept. Again, I have that system it's just a notepad that is in there with it. And that way I can write who it belongs to. You know, on the back of the molds, I write the company. And that way I know who it came from and what the piece is called, so that I'm able to say where to get it and how to get it. It's categorized by, again, what it is, whether it's flowers, it's snowflakes, it's leaves, it's animals, you know, things like that. So,
right. Because, yeah, part of the problem I'm having, particularly at a show like Austin, where everyone gets a goodie bag, boy, do I miss that at British shows. They don't do goodie bags for everyone, and I'm like, ugh. But, you know, but I went to the Cake Masters Award, so I got a goodie bag for that, or I've been to other shows where I've won a prize pack, or I've won a raffle. I have so many tools, like, and very frequently good tools, the tools that I'm very happy to have, because it was something I didn't know I needed it until I got it, and like, oh my God, I love this tool.
But I
can't. Some of them I remember I won in this particular way. Like right beside me here in the box of things that needs to be put away are a bunch of Christmas molds I won from Cake Masters magazine.
Right. Yeah.
And so I did a search word. You know, you do the little thing and you put it in and you never expect anything back. And they're like, oh, you won. I'm like, whee! I have this beautiful array of Christmas molds now. So I remember that because that's a particularly, you know, large prize pack. But, you know, like, but you get a dust in a prize pack. You get a little mold.
Right.
You get a tool. And you don't remember which show that came from. So you're a genius having it written down, because I bet the sponsors
found I've had to, you know, especially because I do tutorials and things like that. I have to know where it came from. Why I'm using. I mean, for shows and stuff like that, I didn't need it. But when I went to doing tutorials and things like that, I knew I needed it.
Yes. So people ask. People say, "Oh, where did you get that?" And I frequently have to say, "Probably an Austin goodie bag. Here's our vendor list.
I always write the company I got it down from and the product that it is. You know, and if I can write it on the product, I will. But if I can't, then it goes. You know, it goes onto that. I'll put a number on it someplace, and then correspondent to where that is. On
See,
the notepad.
You're the organized one. I just have this dream of this system. Well, you've actually done it.
it's following up with it, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, whenever I sometimes use something and I'm like away and I'm at a show and I use something that they, you know, somebody gives me something. If I don't write down where I got it right then and there, I don't remember it.
Yeah.
That's... So, I get home and I'm like, where did I get this?
Hey, but when I get home from a cake show, I'm lucky if I even know my own name half the time. Particularly if it's Austin. Are you kidding? I'm so tired. Oh my God.
You know that feeling?
Yeah.
Hey guys, it's Sydney Galpern from See Me Cakes. Check out my website, seemecakes.com, for tons of free tutorials and to learn more about our pre-cooked crystal clear ice melt tiles, beautiful silicone molds, and tons of other great tips to help make ice melt work easy and fun.
Any questions you have on flour making, on anything that's involved? I'm trying to think what we haven't covered.
Right, well, part of it is, when people do unique things like you do, I'm in two minds. Of one, I want to ask, tell me all of your secrets. And the other one is, no, but you want to sell classes. You don't want to tell all of your secrets. So it's...
I don't mind giving tips and hints. You know, when somebody takes a class, I have three levels that I do. I'm glad to share my handouts, but they don't give all the information. Mm-hmm. I always figure, you know, when you're at a demo, you paid to have a little bit more information. When you've taken a class, you paid to have all the information.
Right.
So I'm one of those. Because that's where, you know, that's where I make my bread and butter, is in the classes. So why give away everything for free? But I am glad to do tips and hints. And if people have tried the techniques, I'm glad to walk you through some of the things that might help you to be able to handle chocolate better. Like the hot hands. Actually, working with hot hands is better for working with chocolate than people who have cold hands.
Oh, really?
Because the chocolate actually, it does work better for people with hot hands. People with cold hands have a real problem getting it to mold properly or to form into certain ways because their hand doesn't heat up the base of the chocolate enough to pinch it together like that. They can hold it in their hand longer. And that's one of the things I always, when I have students in class, I have to break them up holding things in their hand. So,
right.
And touching it and holding it, you know, by one petal or something like that. So I find that teaching them how to take a class with me, it teaches you how to handle the chocolate, where that you don't get as much from me talking about it or demoing it.
I mean, that is the reason to take an in-person class. I mean, again, because I don't make a lot of money at this, I don't tend to pay for very many classes. But when I do, it's because I want to effectively be forced to do it. I mean, that's why I took Don Parrott's piping class last week.
Having them show you how to hold the bag, how to hold the tip, how the tool works properly, where to hold it, what to do. That's what the classes are about. Those are things you just cannot pick up from a book, from a video, from anything that's reading material. It's something you have to experience.
Exactly. Well, and forcing me to do it. I mean, I've been meaning to try pressure piping for, I don't know, how long have I been doing cakes? Like, I mean, I've been meaning to try it, and clearly I hadn't done it. So when, here's my friend, whom I'm happy to support, right, at my other friend's studio, who I just want to hang out with, right? So taking a class like that, to me, I know I'm going to have a positive experience because I'm hanging out with my friends. That's just obvious.
Oh, definitely.
But
and it's a great way to meet people, too, that share your same interest.
Exactly. But then also, the reason I took it, am I going to go out and do a bunch of pressure pipe cakes tomorrow? No. But this was a technique that I wanted to learn, and by having it on a schedule, it meant I finally sat down and tried it.
Well, here's the thing. Have you tried piping your flexible chocolate?
Yeah.
And so it might teach you some things that you can do with it also. So, you know, using it in a different way.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, if you look at the flexible chocolate page, part of the thing is when it's really super fresh, it's very liquidy, that's when you can put
it in
your lace mats. And then if you warm it and cool it and warm it and cool it, so you're not just cooking the water off, you are also actually changing the cocoa's properties a bit. Then you, particularly with the dark chocolate, you get to the point where you can pipe it like it's real. So on my entry that just went to Cake International, that's one of the things that I was a bit frustrated that I totally didn't get is that the back is actually laced with flexible chocolate. That's not a licorice string. That's flexible.
Right.
That's flexible chocolate, and it's piped, and it's there's a perfect point where you can pipe it, where you get a string and not like a flat on one side half rope.
Yeah. As soon as you put it on, I don't remember where you would tutorial on it. I printed that baby off.
Yeah, it's on the website.
I made a batch and started playing with it, and you know, one of the things when it was liquid, I was like, makes sense. I'm going to have to try piping this. I need to talk to her and see if it's pipeable.
Yep.
And you just haven't had a chance to play with it again since then, but.
Yeah, so I can tell you, so definitely, like, the white stuff, which, I mean, again, is what you want if you want to do coloring. I've never got the white to be the right consistency to pipe a solid rope. It's always a little bit flat on one side, just because it is stickier. And you can take more water out, but part of that is that's just the nature of the white chocolate.
Whereas, I'm just wondering, maybe if you might put in, like, some gum derivatives or, you know, or a little thickener into it as you're making it.
You should, you should give it a go and try. Because
I'll play with it and see what I can do.
it could be adding, my suspicion would be if you added cocoa butter, because that is going to have that property where it gets very liquid, but then we'll firm up. Because the fact that you can do it with the dark chocolate better tells me that it's not the amount of gelatin or water, it's the nature of the chocolate itself. And it does matter which kind of chocolate you use. If I buy Aldi's dark chocolate, which is 30p a bar, I mean, that's really cheap, right? It pipes the best.
It's probably more of the compound chocolates, and which would tell you that it doesn't have a lot of the chocolate liqueur in it, but it probably has cocoa in it.
Maybe, yeah.
And so what you probably would need to do for the white is use something like either mix the cornstarch in with your liquids and, or, you know, or a gum derivative, something that as you warm it, while it's warm, will thicken it up.
Right.
So we'll work on it and see what we can get it to do.
Right. But the flip side is the white stuff makes the best lace.
Oh, okay.
Because
it is a little sticky.
Yeah, it is a bit sticky. So you got to be a little more delicate as you pull it out. But it's chocolate, so that means the fridge is going to do better for you. And you can make the colors. So if you make the white flexible chocolate and you make several colors, you can – and if you got to do this whole thing where you warm up your mat and I use a hairdryer. Warm up the mat. Warm up the board the mat is on. Make everything warm, especially in a – you know, if you're in a cold British kitchen like I am in the winter. Make everything warm and then – spread it all out and use your your scraper thing on your lace mat to swirl the colors and stuff. Let it sit for a good few minutes so that it's definitely not liquid. Pop the whole thing in the fridge. You can get beautiful multicolored lace out that tastes like white chocolate as opposed
white
to tasting
chocolate,
like cornstarch, right?
Yeah. I played with it for the lace and to do some other things with it. I just hadn't had a chance to pipe with it and stuff. And so I love it. You know, it's like one more thing that I'm like, ooh. It's edible and it's chocolate. So,
and it's cheap.
You know?
It's cheap compared to cake. I mean, I'm not knocking cake lace stuff I don't mean to be branded with that. I mean, the various products that make lace for cake.
Right.
And I mean, those definitely have their place and stuff too. But again, I'm not making much money. So I don't shell out for that
you
kind
find,
of stuff.
You find it, you know, something that's a little bit different to do with those. I still like the flavor of those. The flavor on them to me is chalky and has an aftertaste. Every time I find something new, I try playing with it if I have a chance. Lately, it has been finding the chance.
It's the finding the chance. I know you need time, opportunity, and some kind of motive.
Yeah.
I mean, while there's playing for playing's sake, if you can. The thing is that let's say tomorrow someone said, you don't need to do any housework today or deal with anything else. You can just pick a technique and work on it. Okay. Well, I have a dozen in my head that I want to do.
I have stacks of things to do.
Right. And so what that ends up happening then is the thing that I know I'm not going to likely use, like pressure piping, because it's just, it hasn't been a thing that I do much of. That was just never, when time would come up, it was just never on the top of the stack. So the a class opportunity, but for people who can afford, and I do know that it's expensive, believe me, because I don't take very many of them because I can't afford them. If it's a friend of yours teaching, that you want to support anyway. You know you're going to have a good time. You know you're going to learn from a good teacher because this is your friend. If you know a friend of yours is teaching a class within a driving distance of your area or if you're at a cake show or whatever, take the class because it's an opportunity to force yourself to do it. Yeah.
If it comes into your area for classes and it's a technique you want to do, go and take that class because not only it may teach you something, but it may teach you, you know, what they're teaching you may not be what you want to do, but you may be able to find ways to use it in other other mediums.
Exactly.
So,
I mean, Dawn's class was on doing the pressure piping and then putting that in an isomalt thing to make an ornament. And that was the first time I actually poured isomalt. I have so much isomalt that I've acquired in show bags, but I'd never gotten around to using because that was, again, maybe next week I'll have time. Maybe next week I'll have time. So, I mean, I learned these new skills. Am I going to make another one of these ornaments? Nope, can't see that happening. But you could
take also that pressure piping and put it onto chocolate.
Right. Well, here's what I've been thinking. Dawn made it so easy. I was so happy with my results on the first go. I mean, it's not that they're perfect, but it just, the technique she taught, and I don't know if she wants the secrets given away, so I'm not going to say what the secrets were, but she gave me a secret, and the secret was really good, and it really took for me, it's the piping and the holding the bag are hard, but she was using other tools.
That aha moment
of, I don't need to do this through the piping bag entirely, I can use these other tools, oh my god. And so now it's like, I just really want to make some, like, Wedgwood cookies.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, sometimes, yeah, like I said, that's what I love about, you know, hands-on classes and demos where you go and see it because you get an aha moment that, you know, that maybe it doesn't have to be just what they're teaching you. It can be used other ways. Even if I've seen the technique 100 times by 20 different people, you know, if somebody comes in and it's something new, I'll go and see it because even if I get that smallest grain of something, I may see something that they're doing that I never thought about doing before.
Yep.
And it makes my life easier. It takes me down the trail to do something different in something else I'm doing. I'm ecstatic when that happens.
Yep.
So people are like, really? You've done this 100 times. I'm like, I want to see what they do and see how it can impact what I do.
Or even just the sideline tips. Okay, so like when I went to Cake International and sat and watching demos, how many people did I watch model heads? I watched Sachiko and Zoe and Carlos and Carla and Isabel, and at least one other person was modeling heads. And so it was all these different people modeling heads. And I had all these sound clips for the show, and I realized, oh, but some of them do cartoon heads, some of them do realistic heads, some of them do sort of in between. And every single one of them, I was able to pull from that demo a clip that I could put on the show that wasn't even directly about the heads. It was about encouraging you to try and knowing that it doesn't have to be perfect. It was about how to make your own tool. I mean, Carlos Lachetti had the tip about how you get the fluff off your hands by taking a little bit of scrap paste and rolling it in your hands and tossing that away or putting stuff. You know, these genius tips. So when you have the opportunity, don't look at a thing of demonstrations and think, I already know how to do that, because you don't.
Right, yeah. You never know what gem you're going to find in all of that.
That's right.
So, you know, but if you went and asked them for tips and hints straight up, they're not going to be able, you know, they might come up with a few, but as they're working with the materials, you get gold. You know, it may not all be gold, but you'll get those gems every once in a while that just make cake decorating better for you. So,
that's right. Exactly. Again, it may not translate directly. You might see someone else pipe away and you might go, oh, that's not how I like to pipe. But then they say, but this is how I do this other part of it. And you go, oh, that solves my problem.
I've taken demos in Spanish where they speak Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, but I've learned from them because just watching what they're doing, I can see something that just clicks with me and makes me go, oh, I need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not, you know, and afterwards I would, if I saw something and I didn't understand, I could grab somebody that I know could translate and go up and talk to them. But yeah, I sat through many Spanish demos when I first started just to learn techniques and stuff and just to see what they were doing because it was fascinating. And sometimes I miss that.
Well, sometimes the people from different countries and different cultures are doing whole different, I mean, like this floral jelly art that's really popular in Mexico. And now I just saw someone from Malaysia at the Cheryl Beto demonstrating at Cake International. And obviously Lourdes.
And that's actually been around for 20 plus years.
At least, yeah. And
I've seen variations on it for 20 years. And yeah, going and finding out how it's done is fascinating.
And if you go look up YouTube videos, many of them are in Spanish. But yeah, if it's a good quality video, you can still see what they're doing. And many people, if you ask questions, I mean, we have Google Translate. We live in the future. We live in this wonderful...
We do. We live in a wonderful area where, that, like I said, you should be able to find something on it. You know, it may not always be a video. It may not always be seeing the person work. But if you're lucky, you can. Especially, that's why I said judges should be able to keep up on techniques and mediums and what's new.
Mm-hmm. If they're reading... If you're reading cake magazines, if you listen to cake podcasts, all of them.
Got a plug in, yeah.
No, Michelle Green, I just had her on a couple of shows ago. She's got a cake podcast, but she's more about the business side. And, you know, this is a new thing. There are a bunch of cake podcasts popping up. I've had the idea.
And I think that's fabulous.
It is fabulous. And I don't feel at all in competition with it because I'm only giving you guys like an hour to 2 hours every other week. I can't fill all your time. I was saying to my husband, maybe I should make like the cake podcasting network and we should all promote each other's podcasts. And because, you know, I have nothing to do, so I should just start a network. That should be a thing I should do.
That would be fun. You know, and that's the thing is a lot of us, you know, a lot of people don't know about the cake podcast. And if there was one place they could go to get the different podcasts, you know,
exactly.
Instead of having, you know, you're on one system or you have to be on another system or you have to be, you know, and, you know, if there was a way to make them so they all came through one, you know, one system, that would be fantastic.
I can totally do that tomorrow. No, wait, I can't. No, I mean, I have thought about doing that and having, you know, a minimal level of gatekeeping where I would say, like, you have to have a minimum number of episodes. And so it can't just be that someone just threw something online that's not good. Right. I would not help someone promote something that's poor quality. But so I've thought, while I was outside hanging the laundry the day after Cake International, I was thinking, I should just totally do this. And I came inside and had breakfast instead. It was
Something else takes precedence, trust me, yeah, you know, if you don't write it down, I know that feeling.
Maybe I'll get
like
on that.
It's like the live chats now with everybody doing stuff on live chats.
Yeah.
Half the time you can't get to see them, you know, because you've already got your day full. I would love to have them advertised a couple of days in advance, you know, hey, you know, I'm doing this or... And I love when they let us know a couple of days in advance. And that's
like PME does.
Little rearing gear and do is start doing a couple of live ones that where people can see how I work.
Yeah, because I love Dawn Parrott's lives. I don't always get to see them because she tends to do them noon Texas time, which is 6 p.m. here, which means it's dinner time here. So I often I'll try to watch when Robin wasn't in school.
A couple of hers, but yeah, she tends to do them, you know, noon Texas time, which is like 10 a.m. my time.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I'm like usually running a kid to school or you know doing this or that or out running errands. So yeah.
Yeah, when my littlest one wasn't in school yet, so bedtime wasn't so strict for her, which meant dinner time wasn't so strict. If we were eating between 7 and 8, I could watch Dawn's thing at 6 p.m. my time. But now that she has to be in bed at 7 because she's in full-time school, means dinner's really between 6 and 7. So I've been missing all of Dawn. I mean, you can always watch them afterwards, but it's nicer when you can participate.
It is. It's nicer when you can participate.
Yeah, and I'm on the PME mailing list, so they will email and say, oh, in this much time we're going to have a live. But then I end up not watching theirs because... They just wiggle their camera so much, it makes me motion sick.
And it's more fun when I can participate. But the information, as it comes out, you know, the tips and hints, again, you know, it's really making it so that it's easier for people to get that. Even if you can't get to a cake show, you can't get to a thing. But if you have a chance to go see people live, you really should.
Absolutely, because that one-on-one interaction and being able to raise your hand and say, excuse me, but could you repeat? Or, but how did you? No, but I don't understand. And I, again, like we were saying, with 99% of judges are happy to 99% of demonstrators are happy
to
take questions.
Happy to go over it again.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, whatever you're working on, it's time to take a stretch. Put your piping bag down, put those tweezers down, put whatever you're working with down. Stretch your hands, stretch your arms, do a big stretch back. You're going to feel so much better after you do this, trust me, guys. Okay, big stretch. Oh. Give your shoulders a bit of a shake. Right? Doesn't that feel better? Okay, now you can get back to being awesome.
We should talk about ISIS because I know before we started recording, we were talking about ISIS a bit and how, because I was a member, I became a member to go to that Las Vegas show simply because I lived there. I was such a newbie. I didn't know what a dummy was. I showed up with real cake. Like, and people were like, well, we usually decorate on styrofoam. I was such a newbie. Like, I was such, I didn't know anything about anything when I went to that ISIS show. So I was an ISIS member, but then because I wasn't going to travel, I kind of let the membership lapse. And over time, I kind of, because I wasn't in the social part of it, it kind of hadn't enticed me to go back. But then because Susie and Kyla.
Right, you know people that are in it. So yeah, yeah. You've joined again.
So I've just joined again.
And that's one of the things we're trying to change. I have to say, you know, ICs, and I've been a member of ICs for over 25 years. For the last 2 years, while I was on the board, I was in charge of certification and education, which is the certification and the new judging program. Now I'm in charge of the awards, and which is scholarships and the Hall of Fame and the Wilbur Brand Awards. If ICs hadn't existed, I wouldn't be who I am today. I really do owe my entire professional side of me. You know, I started with doing cake decorating from the home, did it for, took classes with Wilton and went and taught Wilton, but going to a cake show and then going on to ICs and meeting the people I've met through ICs has given me the chance to travel to meet other decorators throughout the world to demonstrate all over the United States and in Canada, and made it so that I could be a teacher and somebody who had a chance and was able to chase my passion and achieve what I want to do instead of just being a mom and being, you know, an everyday housewife who has a job. So ICs really is, for me, has given me everything. But to that, I've also given back to ICs. You know, so you get what you put into it out of ICs. And same way with any organization, you get what you put into it, you'll get it back. So if you expect it to be a one-way street, it's not going to go anywhere. It's a give and take all the way through. And the more you get to that people get to know you, the more chances and possibilities you have. We tend to lean more towards education, teaching people how they can make cake decorating work in their lives and what they can get out of it. So in teaching them new techniques, maybe touching in on the business side, and like we have the certification program, which is for the master level people who then want to make sure that they have that certification so that when they apply for jobs or when they are doing things, it also lends credence to them. We also have our judging program, which the class itself teaches what the judges are looking for and how to be a good judge. And then they go on and do testing and apprentice judging and things like that so that they can learn how to judge properly and what to look for while you're judging.
Is that program just for within ICs judging, or is the idea that you're trying to train judges for shows in general?
At this time, to be a certified judge, you do have to be a member because the certification is given out through ICs. That's the way certification works. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that there is a level playing ground so that if you go to a cake show in California and then say 2 months later you go to a cake show in Virginia, that there's some set of standards that it's throughout the United States. And we're hopefully going to take that out further into the international, with maybe some of our people will come from South America, like Peru, or from Brazil, and take classes, and, you know, take the judging program and take it back home And that way we start seeing a more level playing ground so that everybody knows what to expect when you go places. Because as you know now, when you go to a cake show, you're not always sure what you're going to find, whether they're going to, if they're going to be harsh judges or easy judges, or be super picky about technique, or they're going to let you slide a little bit on the artistic count. So it just gives you a more solid base for everyone to know where we're coming from, is what we're trying to do.
When someone comes to your judging program and they're going to go do apprenticing, that can be that at any other cake shows, or how does that work?
It's a brand new program that we just started this year. We've been working on it for the last 2 years. Right now we offer it at ICs. We're also going to be offering it once a year in other locations. We just voted as a board to have it at the National Cake Show in Virginia come next March. You'll be able to take the class and take the tests there if you're an ICs member. At this time, like I said, to be an IC certified judge. But you're welcome to come and just take the class and learn from it and learn what the judges expect. Then we will have the ICJs, is what they're called, at different shows. And these judges will then be able to train the people who have taken the classes and the tests, who are apprentice judges. They'll be able to train them to be able to go out and go to other shows. And we're hoping to build the amount of shows that we will be teaching at, that we'll be apprenticing, have apprentices at, and be judging at, so that we have a larger area and more people will get see more of us. So at this time, I think the shows that we have on, that we have for being able to have apprentice judges at, are the Austin show in Austin in February. So that takes the cake. The National show in Virginia, the Denver cake show that they do in September, and the York White Rose show that they do in Pennsylvania in November. We're actively looking for more shows to have ICJs at.
Well, that is very cool. I mean, obviously, I'm slightly affiliated with Austin. Again, the whole sleep at Kyla's house.
And we will have a page on the IC's website that will state where the judges will be, that will be judging, you know, where they'll be judging at, so that our apprentices, and they will get notification where the judges are going to be, so that they can sign up too. Because each time that once they pass their test, they can and apply to be an apprentice judge, they have to apprentice twice to be able to be eligible to be an ICs approved, you know, an ICs, sorry, ICs certified judge.
So then, like we were talking about earlier, in terms of train judges continuing to hone, is this the thing that once you have it forever? Is there a thing like where you have to come back and do any kind of refresher courses, or do you just encourage that, or how does that work?
Well, one of the things we encourage our IC certified judges to do is to come in and train. And so, you know, they will come in and teach. And so all of them are also instructors for the judging program. So, you know, it keeps refreshing them. And hopefully, you know, we haven't set it up that they need to come back, but the only thing that they are required to do, we ask that they come back and take the class every 5 years at this time. If they're teaching it, parts of it, they probably already have it, but they do have to keep up their ICs membership.
Right. Well, yeah. So, okay. Yes, that makes sense.
Because of the affiliation of the program with the organization.
Right. And I guess, well, I mean, ultimately the goal here, particularly like when we had Susie and Kyla on talking about some of the changes that are coming, the goal is to retain more ICs members and gain more ICs members.
Yes, and you know, we're hoping that it will help that, but we also, ICs is all about educating people so that they can use cake decorating through in many different ways in sugar arts, and so that they understand them and they're able to work with them and use them, and that's why the judging program was created to help further that.
And so with the other certification program, I mean, is the primary goal there making it something you can list on a resume? Or
is a certification that you can list on your resume. It can always be there. You will always, you know, you can call yourself a master once you have that, if you have the certified master sugar artist. Again, your certification goes through ICs, so you retain it as long as you are an ICs member. You've earned it, so it's yours to keep. It's one of those things you can list on your resume that you list whenever you go out to teach, whenever you go out to judge.
What are like the main elements of becoming? I mean, I would assume there's a piping aspect and a modeling aspect.
Okay, so what it is with the certification program, the test is basically what you do is you take an 8-hour test. Now, to do this test, and there's this large formula, and we'll be having in January, there'll be a news article about article in the new IC's newsletter regarding this. We just finished editing it and getting it ready for the newsletter. That really explains it well from the standpoint of the candidate who's taking the test. But basically what it is we have a guide that you look through, and we have a series of skills that can bring you from 1 point up to 4 points. You have to pick 8 skills, and at least one of them has to be from each of the four levels or groups. It must equal 21 to 22 points. And okay. So there's a large formula that it takes to get that. And we have everything from a 1 skill point where you are painting on a cake to a 4-point skill that will take you, should take you 25 to 30 minutes to do, or it's multi-components, like doing a botanically correct gum paste arrangement or a sugar sculpture. So it's a great idea to go on to the ICs.org website and look at that guide. Not only that, that guide will kind of explain what the different techniques are to you. So even if you don't take the test, you can understand the different techniques and the different mediums better by reading what the guide talks about.
Okay, so this sounds interesting because it's like, obviously there has to be some degree of all-roundedness that you have to know a variety of skills, but sounds like...
If you're, say, only good at, we'll say, modeling, you're going to have areas you're not comfortable with. You do have to be well-rounded to do well in the certification program. So if you you must know a little bit of piping. You also have to be able to cover a cake both in buttercream and in fondant, an 8-inch cake. Those are both skills that you're required to. And we also take in your artistic aspect of it. So, and how well you work and your work ethic. They call it a work ethic, but it's how well you work in the surface. If you keep it cleanly, you follow food safety habits and things like that. So, as I said, there's a large formula that makes it up, and it's hard to explain in one little time period what that is.
Well, no, because I'm kind of understanding, at least, like, I hope I'm understanding this right, but
I'm giving you really broad strokes.
No, that's fine, because it sounds like it's designed so that you're not just churning out a bunch of carbon copy people who are all doing the same kind of cakes. It sounds like you've taken into account that some people will have very vastly different designs, but still have to have, I mean, obviously the core skills, like covering, if you can't cover a cake, then you have a problem from the start.
Both in buttercream and fondant,
Right.
And that's, those are base level ones that you should know how to do.
Exactly.
And how to do them smoothly and correctly.
But from the sounds of it, if you've got someone who, say, primarily does tiered wedding cakes, that person could do just as well in the certification as someone who does, say, sculpted novelty cakes.
Correct, yeah. And we also allow you to use styrofoam dummies and things like that. The only one that you can't use a styrofoam dummy is the sculpted cakes. The sculpted cakes, you have to use a real cake because you're carving cake away and you need to show how you put it together.
Right. That's
so,
generally
when
the case.
And when they're showing these skills and these techniques, they have to do and there's a certain number in the guide of how many of them they need to do and how they need to put it together. So again, it's very technical about what they need to do. So, like, say you're making a gum paste flour, it tells you that the gum paste flour must be at least a 3-component flour. So that means it must have 3 parts to it. So, like, it must have a stamen, a petal, and a calyx, things like that. So, and I'm coming off the board. I don't have it right in front of me exactly what they are, but this is just off of memory. So don't quote me on exactly what it is.
No, that's fine. I'll put a link in the show notes so anyone who's interested can go look up the details. But you're giving us the gist of it.
So it'll tell you what they ask of you. So you do need to follow those guidelines of what is expected of you. And they want to see it from start to finish. You can have some things pre-made and pre-done, but until you have done it in front of the adjudicators, it is not considered finished.
So is that the kind of thing like where you have to demonstrate in front of them so they can see you make a petal, but then you can have your dried petals to actually finish the flower? Would it be
correct? Yes, okay. That's exactly. Yeah, it's like the miracle of demoing, you know, where you have, you know, you see them do one part of it and then they bring out the piece that's already finished.
Magic of television. That's what I call it. The magic of television.
That's the thing. Yeah. For those who are very artistic and tend to not follow the rules, I will say this is a very technical, it is very technical. So you want to leave your more really wild artistic things at home. So stick with what they understand because it is a very technical test.
Are you telling me that, you know, they're not doing weird gummy things in this test?
They have no idea what, you know, you know, a couple of them may know what flexible chocolate is, but it's not even
in the rules,
let me tell you, you know.
Have you ever had, I sometimes have this problem where I will do a weird thing for a while and then I either get bored of it or, you know, it sort of has reached its natural end or whatever, or maybe I'm just doing something else. And then like 5 years later, I'm like, I want to do that technique, but maybe I want to put a different spin.
Yeah, I call it rediscovery.
I rediscover, but have you ever had this where you Google for advice on something and you come up with your own old advice?
Yes, I have.
I have sometimes been reading my own post for a minute before I realize I'm reading my own post.
Well, I'll read somebody else who's giving that advice, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's my advice.
That's my student. They're out there. No, I mean, I haven't had so much, but I've definitely had where I decide, you know, I did this thing 3 years ago. I want to try it again. I want to revisit it. Let's see who else is doing it. Type, 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 and all of the pages are me.
Yeah, I've done that too. Yeah, like, it's like, oh,
that's not
that's
helping
not,
me.
They're all me. So, you know,
I already knew what was in my brain. I was hoping someone else had taken this further in the last 3 years, but apparently not. It's because we're weird.
It is. And, you know, it's because you're hoping that, you know, other people have picked up your technique. You know, yeah. I went through it before, you know, the age of internet, and let me tell you, it was kind of interesting to have somebody teaching your technique when you're like, wait a minute, what?
What?
I buy a ticket for a demo and go, wait a minute, that's my technique.
The student has become the master, except no, you just took my technique.
Yeah, though,
I mean, we could do a whole show.
Yeah, that's a whole other show on respect. Yeah, you know, but well, and they didn't learn it from me, so they got it from somebody else.
Right,
so, you know, I always say, you know, everything old is new again. You know, and
yeah,
it's always interesting to see how things progress and how things go back to what, like we're going back into an age of piping buttercream and things like that again. I'm seeing that, you know, the buttercream and the royal icing piping becoming more and more alive again,
right,
in the United States.
And well, now there are various companies make molds of the piping.
Pipe drinks. I know. When I saw that the first time, I went, well, why didn't anybody think of that beforehand?
Yeah, because you know what? Some people love piping.
And here's the thing with the molds by Marvelous Molds.
Marvelous Molds, yeah.
When Erlene does, she takes lace and she pipes on top of them, and that's why they were so unique and different. And I loved Erlene. Erlene, to me, is one of my cake goddesses. I absolutely followed and loved all, you know. You learn from the masters and the people who come before you, and you hopefully build on what you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one thing I always said when I first started out. If I could just make a footprint in the cake world, I'm going to be happy. Made a footprint.
I think it's safe to say you have.
It has changed, you know, but it's kind of nice to see that you can change things.
You definitely have, because like I said, you are known for those chocolate flowers, and you are definitely pushing those boundaries. I mean, I'm just blown away by your edible tape.
And when you find out how to do it, you go, oh, that's so easy, you know, and it's, I'm hoping to find a way to make it so that, keep your finger crossed, and hopefully if I can figure out a way for it to stay, my problem with it is after a while, it's not sticky, you know, and I'm talking usually a day later, it's not sticky. And so if I can fix that problem, we may be seeing it on the market. I will talk with Lexi and see about seeing if we can put it on the market, but we have to overcome a lot of obstacles on that one first. But it's really easy to make and really easy to do. So,
well, so then anyone who can take one of your classes should go do that.
Yes.
We will put your links on the show notes and get people to follow you on Facebook. Is that the best place if people want to?
That is the best place. And I do have one on Facebook that I need to update. I have my business on Facebook, but I haven't been able to access it in about a year and a half. So it too needs to be updated. I think I need to either shut it down somehow or start a new one. So
people should follow your personal account, and then
yeah,
they'll know about what's coming.
Yeah, I follow my personal account. If you just follow Mary Sinaga, it's the easiest one. It usually has all my crazy stuff on it.
Then, well, we will put that in the show notes, and I assume people, if they want to ask questions about your chocolate flowers and stuff, that's the best place to do that.
Please, you know, feel free to post a message to me. If you're an ICES member, you go on the ICES website, you'll find my email. You're welcome to email me and send things like that. I'm in the board contacts, so you're welcome to email me also.
Well, that is very cool. Thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you for having me on. I enjoyed our time together.
I would happily keep talking for another hour, but it's 2:00 in the morning, so.
I know, you're just going to say, we've been on for 3 hours.
This has been great. I'm so glad you came on, and you should definitely come back on in the future as well.
Well, I'd love to come back on in the future, and, you know, if we get a chance, I'd love to, you know, talk with you at Austin. So.
Yeah, well, I will stick my microphone right at you in Austin, and you're going to be on the show again. Well,
have a good night, and go get some sleep.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Two favorite things are buttercream and chocolate, you know. So
that sounds delicious.